far.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Indulge for a minute in a little healthcare fantasy. You're not feeling well, so you call your doctor. Instead of being told your doctor has an opening in 4 months, you get an appointment the very same day. At the office, instead of a waiting room full of screaming, sniffling children, there are the magazines you actually read. Soft chairs, a cappuccino. Within moments, not hours, a receptionist says the doctor can see you. Breezing into the office, you sit down for an hour-long consultation, free from interruptions. Sound like fantasy? Not anymore. It's called concierge care. It's personalized, it's pricey, and if it clears some legal hurdles, it spells further fragmentation. What is that word? Fragmentization for the U.S. healthcare system. Concierge care practices are currently operating in Seattle, Florida, and New York City. Recently, two Boston doctors, Dr. Stephen Flyer and Dr. Jordan Bush, shook up the city's conservative medical community by starting their own concierge care practice. It's due to open in the spring. They say that cost-cutting HMOs have made it impossible to offer quality care. And while they can't fix the system, they can reshape their practice to give their patients the care they deserve. Connection listeners, what's wrong with a healthcare plan that offers better service for more money? And what does the rise of concierge care say about the state of U.S. health care? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, to join us online. You can find us at theconnection.org. I'm joined in the studio this hour by Dr. Stephen Flyer. He's starting up the concierge care practice. He's also an assistant clinical professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. I'm also joined by Dr. John Goodson, a practicing physician and associate professor at Harvard Medical School, and from a studio in Arlington, Virginia, by Paul Ginsberg. Paul is director of the Center for Studying Health System Change. Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
Stephen Flyer, I will begin with you. Last month, you sent a letter to your patients, and in the first paragraph, you told them, "My commitment to superior care will never change. Unfortunately, today's fiscal reality is forcing primary care physicians to see too many patients. The constraints of a large practice, seeing over 30 patients a day, compromise my ability to give you the care you deserve. Therefore, as of April 1st, I'll leave my current practice. My new practice will be limited to about 300 patients." Down from how many?
Well, down from at one point well over 4,000 patients. And I think that in general, as we look across the spectrum of primary care practices, the majority of physicians practicing in this area have panels as large as 3,000 or 4,000 patients.
Now, you've asked your patients to write you a letter, send you a little deposit, say they want in or they want out. What kind of response are you getting?
The response has been really quite good. We have many patients who are interested in coming with us to this new practice, and we have many patients who are not. We are doing everything we can to transition care for those who can't follow us or choose not to
find them another doctor.
Yes.
And is this something that you came to over some period of time, or was it watching the success of these sort of platinum practices, as they're called, around the United States that led you and Dr. Bush to say, that's what we want to do?
Well, the experience that led us to do this were, for me and for Jordan, my partner, both very personal experiences. It came to me from an experience with a particular patient where, in a sense, unencumbered with regard to pressures for time, for a brief moment, I was able to deliver the kind of care and the kind of attention that to me made a great difference and to my patient made an enormous difference. And experiencing the ability to give care that was meaningful to the patient and meaningful to me, unencumbered by time, led me to think about ways to recast my practice and recreate my practice so that I could guarantee that level of attention to everyone.
John Goodson, you think this is wrong. Why?
First, let me begin by saying that in no way do I represent the conservative Boston medical establishment. And in fact, I really represent a much more progressive and, I think, forward-looking feeling about the need for change in healthcare. This is really all about the crisis in U.S. healthcare and the breaking up or splintering of healthcare as we know it. I have no personal disagreements with much of what Stephen and Jordan say. I think as physicians, we're privileged to walk the walk with patients. I think all of us cherish those moments. I feel that we're all affected by those. But what we're seeing here is something much more profound. We're seeing the system really stressed in a very deep way. And I feel, as an activist for healthcare change, that it's absolutely necessary that we, all of us, as citizens, take this opportunity to rethink what we're trying to accomplish with our healthcare system.
But that's exactly what Stephen and Jordan are doing with their proposal. They're saying the system that we're in is not working for us as doctors. We don't feel it's working for those patients we want to deal with. Therefore, we're going to do something different.
Right. And so my point is, play this out. Let's take this out to the extreme. Say more and more qualified physicians begin to say, okay, you can have access to me only if you're willing to pay an extra premium, something beyond. So then you start running into shortages. You start creating the sense that there's something better out there. You know, all of us as physicians strive to do exactly what these physicians are talking about doing. Our job is to provide access, is to provide high quality care, is to provide communication, is to provide support in times of need. That is what our profession is committed to and has been committed to since the beginning of medicine. What we're seeing here is the growth of marketing of special services. This is really, I think, most fundamentally an example of how people are starting to see more and more medicine as a commercial market that can be exploited. And you're developing the concept that there's something more or special out there. But let me emphasize at the very beginning, we have a crisis in healthcare. We must address the crisis before it becomes a meltdown situation.
Let's set the crisis aside, Stephen, and just deal with the point that John is making about your duty as a physician to treat all people, not just the people who can afford this exclusive service you're setting up.
Well, I think physicians have always treated the patients who are under their care and have limited, for reasons related to the size of their practice, the time that they have available, have limited themselves to a specific number of patients for whom they can manage that care. Many physicians such as John, actually close their practices to new patients when they feel they cannot or are unable to provide levels of care that are appropriate. So everyone caps their practice at a particular size. I think it's clear, and I agree with John, that it is an enormous privilege to, as you said, walk the walk with our patients. I think that walking that walk for a 5-minute visit is often not sufficient for some patients and for some physicians to feel satisfied with what's available.
Okay, but you're saying you're doing this for the patients. In effect, you're doing it only for the patients who can afford to walk that walk at the $4,000 premium that you've set for people to participate in this.
Well, we've decided when we built this practice, the concept for this practice, we built it from the bottom up, recognizing the things that we wanted to do, the services that we wanted to provide. And beginning from that perspective, we said, how many patients can we care for and deliver this level of care? If we could have done it for 3,000 patients, it would have been the most marvelous thing in the world to be able to do that. I don't think we are capable of giving that guarantee of service to that large a number of patients. So as we looked at creating a business model based around the delivery of levels of service and levels of quality that we felt were appropriate for us and for our patients, we set the number at a maximum of 300. Part of our desire to create quality was to actually create a limited practice whereby we would not be overrun by large numbers of patients and limited amount of time per person.
Paul Ginsberg, joining us from the studio in Arlington from the Center for Studying Health System Change. You've looked at this practice. Do you have reservations about the sort of move that Stephen's describing?
Yes, I do. If this became a more prevalent phenomenon and many physicians went from practices that served 3,000 or 4,000 patients to 300 patients, we'd have some real threats to access to physician services by those not able to pay these premiums.
Are we at that stage? Are you looking at the growth of this type of service in a way that has you worried we're going to actually get there?
You know, frankly, maybe I shouldn't say this on a show about this, but I believe that this is a very limited phenomenon right now, and that we're hearing a lot about it because of the ability of some of the entrepreneurs behind concierge medicine to make pitches to the press, to get attention to it. You know, it's really quite a handful of physicians at this point who are doing it. I actually think that a much more significant phenomenon that could be happening now would be physicians that are continuing to run ordinary practices, but who are declining to contract with insurance companies. In a sense, their services would still be covered by insurance, but they're telling their patients, this is like what it was like before managed care. Here's my bill. I'll help you file your claim for insurance, and you pay the difference.
But we're not in a system like that. I mean, the doctor's fees are limited by Medicare and Medicaid and HMOs.
Well, no, actually, well, they are by Medicare and Medicaid. But with HMOs, it's really up to the physician. Are you willing to contract with HMO A and agree to their fee schedule, or are you not willing to contract? And as you know, the majority of patients are in PPOs today rather than HMOs. A PPO patient has a choice. Do you want to go to a physician with a contract with that PPO and pay a very limited amount of cost sharing?
Are you saying, Paul, that in effect that the type of concierge care that's being proposed is really not a whole lot different from a doctor just saying, hey, these are my fees?
No, actually what I'm saying that they're what seems to be the difference, a doctor, and I know a doctor in Washington, D.C. that's doing this, saying this, here are my fees. I'm not signing any contracts with managed care plans, but you still, if you're in a PPO, you still can use your managed care insurance at my practice. But the difference is this dramatic reduction in capacity that the concierge medicine is talking about of providing such deluxe services to people, and this is fine if it's just for a small segment of very rich people, but let's imagine if 20% of the population was served by practices which have such small volumes. I think this would cause a crisis.
John Goodson, is that likely
system.
To happen?
You know, I think we must recognize that over the last 10 years, with the advent of for-profit medicine and the marketing of image, healthcare has become profoundly changed. And what we're seeing here is just another iteration. We are marketing fears. I think that what this practice is all about is marketing the fear that somehow you're not going to get the right kind of care unless you pay extra money. HMOs have been marketing the fear that care is going to be denied if you don't participate. I think we as a country need to readdress what our healthcare system is all about. The healthcare system is fundamentally to take care of the health of the citizens.
Connection listeners, concierge care, is it marketing fear or is it marketing comfort? What's your view on the implications of this growing business for the healthcare system? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. We'd like to have you in on the conversation. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about a move in the healthcare business to set up platinum practices, concierge care. What are the implications for you if you can afford it? And what are the implications for you if you can't? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My guests are Dr. John Goodson. He's a physician at Mass General Hospital in Boston and associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Stephen Flyer is with me. He is leaving his practice at Beth Israel Deaconess to start Personal Physicians Healthcare. And he is an assistant clinical professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Paul Ginsberg's on the line from Arlington. He's director of the Center for Studying Health System change. And we're going straight to the phone lines. Steve is joining us now. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'd like you to understand clearly my approach to this is a free market capitalist, but also I'm one of those, I'm not a rich person. In fact, I'm an unemployed landscaper. But my opinion is that this is the way to go. As a capitalistic society, it's got to be free, and those that can afford for it, pay for it. And
if you can't afford it, Steve, and someone says then the quality of the care or the type of care that you get isn't as good as a result, you don't have a problem with that.
It's not, you know, it's not the best of all possible worlds from my point of view, but I think if our as the whole, as your guests have been talking about, if the whole system is going to get to where it should be, this is the way to go. You know, there's going to be a transition problem. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, a lot of people are going to, a lot of doctors.
I think there are many areas where there are similarities outside of healthcare. I think, for example, in how we deal with feeding the hungry, with housing the homeless.
This is Stephen Flyer, who wants to set up one of these businesses. Go ahead, Steve.
That's correct. I think that in areas where we have clearly identified a societal need, there are methods for distributing services and things to people who can't afford them. And I think that the same arguments can be made with regard to housing and to food and to education. There are people who make choices within the array of those things that are guaranteed basics, and there are those who choose and would like to have things that are better. There are people who send their children to private school, and there are people who live in luxury housing. And
so
those
things don't change
the issue of allowing people the choice to both offer services that are different or unique and to purchase services that are different or unique.
Let me just, this is a great question, Steve, because I think it really touches on one of the fundamental problems with the way we've organized healthcare in this country. Let me first point out to you that we do provide basic services to everybody as far as education is concerned, as far as fire protection, police protection, sewerage, water supply. There are many things that we as a society have done for everybody. We have not done this for healthcare. It is not a free market. If you understand markets, you have to have a consumer that does not have to purchase and a seller that does not have to sell. I'm glad you've been healthy, Steve, but I can tell you from my own personal experience that you do not know the meaning of healthcare crisis. You do not know the meaning of the arbitrary events that can happen in your life that could profoundly affect your personal health risk.
Go ahead,
you
Steve.
Should not live without some kind of healthcare insurance. Nobody should have to live a life in this country without some kind of safety net.
Steve, go ahead.
I hear what you're saying, I know what it means to live without health insurance. I've had to go to the emergency room for bee stings and appeal for
it. You don't know the meaning of a hospitalization. You can drop $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. Tell me when to stop. Tell me when it hits your limit.
What has this got to do with the proposal that Dr. Flyer's promoting? I mean, that's an argument for or against health insurance.
Can I say something again?
Go ahead,
further?
Steve.
It's, you know, I think, you know, the government is just too much involved in this. I think if it goes to the free market, there's going to be a lot of doctors out there who, you know, they got 300 patients. They're going to have free time, and they're going to start to do pro bono stuff.
Steve, let me just
go back
and explain
to you. That's exactly true, actually.
This is not about the government. It's not about the post office. It's not about the IRS. This is about a fundamental right that all residents of the United States should have to a safety net of health care access.
And
that's,
I agree with you completely that safety net ought to be there. I believe also that the existing safety net and future safety nets don't necessarily answer the need of all patients, that despite the presence of safety nets, despite the presence of insurance, there are people who are dissatisfied with aspects of their care, whether that be aspects of the quality of care, the service,
right,
the availability.
But Stephen,
and those are the issues that we are...
stretch that net. As you're going to the high end of the net, but as you stretch it and say, you know, I'm not going to serve those people, and other people, other doctors say, wow, I like what he's doing. I'm just going to take care of those people.
Let me comment on that.
Aren't there people then like Steve who won't get the same quality of care that you're offering.
Well, I think that there is a tremendous overabundance of physicians. Actually, if you look at data on the availability of primary care physicians as well as specialty physicians, there is statistically an overabundance. The issue of availability...
Paul Ginsberg, go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I've got to challenge that. What we're seeing lately is a real tightening of the supply-demand situation for physicians. And many people are starting to question the projections that were made a number of years ago about an enormous surplus of physicians. In our surveys, and we survey both individuals and physicians every 2 years, we're seeing increasing times to get waits to get an appointment. If you talk to people, you know, a fairly common topic lately is how long I have to wait to see a specialist. So this is why I'm so concerned about supply, that I think we do not have a situation of enormous surplus. I think we have a pretty tight supply of physician services at the moment.
Let me
go to another call, if
okay,
I can. I want to thank Steve for his call to Burlington, Vermont. Greg, you're on The Connection. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm outraged by this, and I think that we need to go in exactly the opposite direction. We need to move towards universal health care, and I think it does affect everybody. In my personal experience, I'm currently covered by the state's program for very low-income Vermonters, and I work full-time, and 2 weeks ago, I had to go to the doctor, and I had a very long wait. And he had very little time to spend with me before he had to rush off to some other patient. And pretty soon my income's going to go up to the point where I'm not going to have any health insurance anymore. So I think that every doctor that gets out of the loop, you know, who decides, hey, I don't want to deal with this person in the low-income health plan, you know, I'm not making enough money. I have to rush through all these patients. I'm going to go and deal. There's a lot of rich people out there. They'll pay me more money. I can make more money.
So what do you think, Greg? Do you think the government should forbid doctors like Stephen Flyer from doing this or say you can only do it if you accept patients who have no insurance? Do you see a way of making it work?
Well, yes, actually, I do. I think we can kind of have both. And what I would say is it's kind of like education. With education, there are people who go to very expensive private schools, yet the taxpayers, there is a system like the person said earlier, we have a system that provides a basic education for everyone. We have food stamps. We have a system for people to provide food. But we don't have that for health care. I could easily have no health care. And I think that maybe we ought to heavily tax these people, these doctors that want to do this, and take some of the profit from the CEOs of the pharmaceutical companies and the HMOs and the private hospitals, and take that money and provide a system, a safety net. And once everybody is covered, financed on the backs more on the people at the very upper who are making a huge profit on our health care, then I think if everybody's covered, then if people want to pay $20,000 a year to have Gold Star health care, then I think that's fine.
Let me just make a comment here about what you're saying, Greg.
This is John Goodson speaking.
John here. Nice to hear from you. I think it is our health care system, and I think if there's any message I want to pass on to those out there who are listening, is that this is an enormously complicated problem that we face, and it's opportune that we are talking today on Martin Luther King's birthday, because this is a civil rights issue. We systematically discriminate against a certain segment of our population. You know, Dick, you come from Canada. In Canada, years ago, they made a commitment to provide health care at a basic level to all. We have just not figured that out yet. We can do this. We must do this.
What this practice represents for universal health care, part of the same argument
absolutely.
That we're having here.
The reason it's the same argument, Dick, is this. We are seeing the commoditization of medicine, the for-profit introduction, which began about 15 years ago, and Paul, you can fill in some of the details here, began this notion that you could sell healthcare as a commodity. what we're seeing with this group here is just another iteration of that, that somehow you can sell
absolutely
something
wrong.
Special.
This is not a commodity. This is actually an
enhancement
service.
Of healthcare. Our job as professionals, as physicians, is to deliver our part of the deal, that is high-quality care to virtually everybody that we can.
But for years, I've been able to check into a hospital and say, I want a private room, not a semi-private room. I'll pay a little bit more for that. What's different?
Because what the basics of health care, the quality of health care, is not the limousine, it's not the small waiting room, it's not the short wait. That's the fantasy here. The quality of health care is the quality of what goes into health care, which is the decision-making, the access to appropriate testing, the access to appropriate consults, and the formulation of a plan which makes you better. You know, the part of what this is all about is using this notion that somehow the waiting room and the amenities are what make good quality care.
That's not what we're saying at all.
And in fact,
what we're saying
is the content of the care that makes good quality care.
I agree with you completely that it's the content of the care. And I'm not so presumptuous as to say that I'm a spokesman for what quality means. I think that patients can vote with their desire to join a practice like this as to whether or not they believe this represents quality from their perspective. I think that quality has many faces. There is technical quality, and we are certainly putting every effort into the highest level of technical quality in terms of how we approach the scientific and medical aspects of what we do. We're investing in the information technology, which will allow us to prospectively manage care in a much more active and interactive fashion with patients. And I believe that service quality is a major component of the patient's perception of quality. Service quality means how quickly the telephone is answered, how long one has to wait, whether or not one has sufficient time with a patient. When Greg called and said he didn't have enough time with a patient, I actually feel strongly that from the physician side and the patient side, that's a sorely lacking commodity. We don't have adequate time. And I think that from my perspective, I'm not able to fix the system nationally or broadly. I can make a solution that works for me, for my patients, and can solve the needs that we are feeling relative to those things that are of value for patient and doctor in our small environment.
Okay, Greg, thank you for your call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And to Deerfield now, Jim, you're on The Connection. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I would just like to say that myself, I'm a geriatric care manager, and I receive private pay fees from typically the long-distance relatives of elderly clients.
What do you do specifically, Jim?
Typically, it's an elderly person that needs coordination of care, assessment, monitoring of care.
You're not a doctor.
Well, I am, but I'm the husband of a doctor who has the last 3 years come in the highest in her group. She works for a physician hospital organization. She's come in the highest in her group for patient satisfaction and has had her pay cut 3 years in a row. So my income goes up as hers goes down. I've actually suggested to her that either moving out of Massachusetts or maybe becoming a nurse would be a more lucrative way for her to go.
What do you think about this concierge care?
I think it's fine. I think it's fine. I mean, I would like a world where universal coverage was possible. I think that we are culturally allergic to the idea of universal health care in this country. And I do think that this, as well as collective bargaining and other movements, are going to finally put doctors out of the situation where they're forced to provide, in some cases, dangerous care. I refer to my wife and her partners. They're like gerbils in a habit trail. They're told to work increasingly faster and faster and faster. It's to the point where I think they don't feel good about the care they're providing. They make less money every year doing it.
That's something that that Stephen Fire actually talks about in his proposal to go to this new business. But I want to bring Paul Ginsberg in on this. I mean, if the system, Paul, is as flawed as everybody says that it is, do you think this sort of concierge care, this high-end proposal that's coming in a number of different parts of the United States could, in fact, force the kind of change that should happen?
Well, certainly, by making some people more dissatisfied with the system that may get attention.
Or making some people more satisfied, I believe, as well.
Well, satisfied people don't complain. But if I can give a perspective, you know, throughout our economy over the last decade, as income has become more unequal, you know, various industries have come up with some very fascinating high-end versions, you know, high-end home appliances, high-end gourmet foods. And less of this has happened in medical care, and partly it's because of values. And I think that many physicians have the values that the Dr. Goodson has been talking about the fact, the importance of everyone having some minimum quality level of health care. And I think the reason that medical care has not gone to as much of a unequal for-profit thing as others has been the resistance of many doctors.
Let me comment on that, Paul, because
sure.
I think that this is an extremely important concept that we as professionals, and I talk for myself and my colleagues, I think have an obligation to be activists for a better system. I am personally unhappy to work in a system that discriminates against people. I feel it's my duty to make the system better and to expand the access to the system. I disagree with you, Jim. I think, frankly, that culturally we believe in universal access, but as a society, we just haven't figured this out yet. But we've had other situations in our past where we've had difficulty achieving the best end, but we have done it. And the only way things are going to get better is if people like yourself and those out there listening take up this challenge and begin to work hard. This is our healthcare system, and we must make it work. We owe this to ourselves.
But I think it's also quite clear that one size doesn't fit all, and that there are needs and desires that individuals have that can be solved in a variety of different ways. And I'll ask John, even in your own hospital, for example, there is an executive health program. There is an executive registry that provides enhanced access to individuals who pay extra or are donors to the hospital. And these are things even within your own hospital and own system that are provided for people who want or need more.
Let me just comment on that.
Listeners, what are we talking about here? It sounds like we're not talking about a service of selling refrigerators. We're talking about the profession of medicine. We're talking about something which, in the minds of many people, is somehow different from a commodity. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have your thoughts. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Org.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour, we're talking about the proposals for a certain quality of healthcare service, a concierge service that allows extra frills if you are willing to pay extra money for that, and what the implications of that will be for the American healthcare system.
Can I just make one point here about frills? I don't think, at least from my perspective, this is about frills.
Stephen Flyer, go ahead.
It's not about frills, and I know that as people have looked to put a word on this practice, they talk about the boutique or the concierge aspects of it. I actually think the fundamental issue here is the change of a practice to a small number of patients relative to the number of physicians, that the ratio of physician to patient is fundamentally a part of the quality of care, and whatever mechanism one can create to alter that relationship, to enable more time. It's really about time, about quality, and about attention. And the frills and some of the other added services are a way to allow that to happen. But we designed this practice from the perspective of creating a better relationship in terms of numbers and in terms of time between doctor and patient.
And also, let me just say, I think it is about time and quality and access and attention.
Are you satisfied with the amount that you have in your practice?
Hang on.
The point is that this is our healthcare system. And those of you who cannot afford this premium have got to realize that it's time to take control and make the system work for everybody. This is an important moment in the history of our country. We must move to universal health care access. It must happen.
But at this moment, there is also the growth of what is becoming quite an attractive business. We're joined on the line now by Darren Engelhardt. He's the chief financial officer of MDVIP. It is a service similar to the one that Stephen's proposing, based in Florida. And Darren, you're planning on moving outside to set up franchises elsewhere?
Good morning. Yes, that's correct. Not franchises in a legal sense, but certainly affiliations with physicians around the United States. We are currently in discussions with physicians in California, in Massachusetts, in Maryland, in Virginia, in Connecticut.
The doctors like this.
The doctors are very frustrated with the current state of healthcare, as are patients in this country. And I've been listening this morning, and I certainly agree with the perspective of your guest in that we are facing a crisis in healthcare.
Well, that's one thing we all agree on.
That's one thing we definitely agree with,
but,
Darren. But, you know,
hang on a second. Wait a second, John.
What are you offering access to,
John,
Darren?
John, stand by. I've asked Darren to join the program because I'd like to just hear a bit about the business side of this. As doctors say, yes, we want to do this, are you able to tell them, based on your experience, that this is an opportunity where the doctors themselves can make more money and work less?
Not exactly. Our company, MDVIP, is able to provide a model whereby physicians could, in fact, stand to make additional money. The question of working less is not really any aspect of our program. Really, the essence of the program is to provide a physician the time that's needed for individualized care on a patient-by-patient basis. So
MDVIP limits the patients to what, about 600 per doctor?
Correct, 600 per doctor. So it's not a function of the doctor having less time and more free time, rather having more time available for a reduced patient base.
The way I would look at it, actually, is that this is not about working less. It's about working differently.
Except, and though, I've read anecdotes where doctors in these services are spending 4 to 5 hours in the office and going, oh, I finally have the quality of life that I want after 20 years.
We're focused on,
we
on
must
doing
realize
is actually—
Stephen first and then John.
You know, the current system, actually, it's been called by Don Berwick and the Institute of Healthcare Improvement as the tyranny of the visit. That, in fact, when healthcare finance pays doctors for visits, what doctors do is they do visits. So much of what care is actually occurs outside of visits. And we have, in the status quo, been actually forced to put everything into a visit-oriented
Come
style
to the point,
of care. The point is that care can be over the telephone, care can be in thought, in prospective management of one's patients, in thinking about issues that relate to them, whether or not they're in front of you.
John.
I'll
be right back to you, Darren. First,
okay,
to John.
I want to be sure that people understand that there is hope for a better future. You know, I think that there's no question that there's just a whole raft of problems in the healthcare system. What we're seeing here is a splintering of healthcare delivery. I think we're seeing profiteering from healthcare. You know, if you take the numbers and work out what my colleagues are planning to make, in addition to their regular reimbursement, it's $2.4 million for the practice of two people. And I would venture to say, Darren, that part of what you offer—
Are you saying that it is a bad thing for these people to want to set up a business that's going to make them a living?
I think the word I used was profiteering, Dick, and I think that's the point here, that we as professionals have an obligation not to utilize our positions inappropriately. Yes, we must make a living. I'm not denying that. Yes, the reimbursement system needs to be retooled, but we also must begin the process of planning a different world. Let me just tell you that is happening in our state. We have now begun the process of constructing a blueprint for a state-based system of universal health care access. It's sponsored by the state. There's an outside consultant that's been hired. This is a result of the ballot campaign initiative in the 2000 election.
I don't want to go too far down into a description of this.
But
I'd like to bring Darren
future.
Back in. Darren?
Dick, I think the one point that really hasn't received as much focus as it deserves this morning in the discussions is the right of patients to choose how they would like to receive health care, the manner in which they would like to receive it, the environment they'd like to receive it, and similarly, the right of physicians to choose to a certain extent the manner in which they want to deliver what, in their mind, is a particular level of care.
But aren't you leaving out, Darren, the right of patients who can afford this service to choose? Because it's not the right of all patients.
That is true. The MDVIP membership fee is $1,500, which equates to $125 a month. we are saying that people who choose to invest in their health care should be entitled to make the decision to spend $125 a month, much as the way, as Stephen had said before, people choose to send children to private school or people choose to invest in any other aspect of their personal lives.
And this is again, this issue of marketing. You know, what we have seen in the last 15 years is the creation of a health care market. And what Darren is talking about is the notion that somehow you can market something more. You know, it is what's happening. I'm not denying that. But what I'm saying, this must be the clarion call for all of us to go back and rethink what we're doing. You know, I'm not the conservative in this room. I'm the radical. I'm the person that's saying we've got to stop what we're doing right now and retool, because if you take this and play it out for another 15 years and you add to this the shortages of nurses, the expanding pharmaceutical costs, you're going to have a system that completely melts down. This is an important moment in the history of our republic.
Darren Engelhardt with MDVIP, last word to you.
I disagree that this is a focus on marketing. I think that marketing without substance, it will never be successful in the long term. I think what we are providing is an option with very legitimate services and levels of care that are not currently available in the healthcare market. The market is significantly fragmented, as we have all, I think, agreed this morning. The point that we believe we're doing is providing one option, one choice for people who choose to have a different type of care.
Darren, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Darren Engelhardt, Chief Financial Officer of MDVIP. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Sharon's joining us from Worcester. Hi, Sharon.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm asking this question as someone who has both worked in a hospital and who has many friends who are in the medical profession, both as physicians and nurses, and who is also a cancer survivor. My question is two-part. It's a practical one and an ethical one. Your guest, Dr. Flyer, despite his statement to the contrary, did compare his service to commodities. He compared it explicitly to housing and to consumer goods, and he talks about investing in people's health care as if my need, for example, for cancer surgery was a luxury or an indulgence and not a life-or-death matter. Dr. Flyer, if you start a sign-up sheet for patients and you find that you still have more prospective patients than you're willing to see, does the list then become first come, first serve, or do you narrow it down further by raising your least fees?
I can answer
Let's
that.
Let's get an answer to that, Sharon, then we'll be back to you.
The answer is we've actually set a maximum number of patients that we would have under any circumstance, and to this point we have not yet filled our quota of patients. So we will, in fact, take care of patients who choose to join our
First
our
come,
practice.
First serve, and then
first
a waiting
come,
list?
And then
okay,
a waiting
Sharon,
list.
Okay, Sharon, back to you.
Okay, and the second thing is, it's a more profound question, whatever happened to the notion of medicine as a calling? What will the proliferation of this type of mindset do to the reasons why doctors enter the profession to begin with?
Well,
I
do believe...
let me finish, please. I submit, Dr. Flyer, that if you're less upset about the restrictions placed upon your time than the need for control and the desire to do less work for greater return at the expense of those who must go without. And you shouldn't gloss over your motives by talking about service and investing. It's frankly a financial issue with you, and it's an issue of control. I think,
Sharon, let's deal with the ethical thing that you raised.
One more thing, and then I'll leave you to answer. I think that this type of approach is, unless we have the safety net of a national health care system, is on its face and in its core unethical. Thank you.
Sharon used the two words, a calling, and that's the point I'd like you to hear you speak about, Stephen, because there is something which distinguishes those of you who are trained as doctors from those of you who are trained as chefs or pilots who can hire their services out to the people who can afford them.
I agree, and in fact, it is clear to me that caring for people is my calling. There is nothing that is more rewarding or valuable than the ability to make a difference in someone's life. What I have found is that the external pressures and the constraints that are part of the current healthcare financing systems prevent me from doing that at a level and to a degree that is most meaningful to me.
John,
this is very much a personal decision relative to me, my practice, my sense of what I want to offer my patients, and creating a structure whereby I can express those values of this wonderful calling in the most meaningful way possible.
And all, in my response to that is, I am so sorry, because I do believe that both Jordan and Stephen are caring physicians, but I also know that my colleagues stand side by side with me, committed to do what we started out doing. Medicine is about kindness, it's about caring, it's about compassion, and I would add it's about activism. You know, we're not happy with the system. We want it to be better. We need all of us to join together because this is an important message. Physicians, yes, are feeling that they're not having the resources, the time resources to spend with their patients. All of us that have stayed in the current system believe in the same values. That's why we're here.
Paul Ginsberg, John Goodson spoke earlier about this being a moment, and I'm wondering if in your perspective, if there's a debate over the type of concierge care that we're talking about, and if people use this as a way to address the flaws in the system, it's a moment that actually works, in effect, to get people rethinking about how to repair everything rather than just one end of it.
Yes, I think there's really something to that, that in a sense, we're at a transition in healthcare now where we've gone through an era of managed care, which, in a sense, people have had a lot of objections to, and it's loosening up. And unfortunately, our costs are starting to rise rapidly. And this, in a sense, is a time when people need to start talking about the type of healthcare system they want. And I think what concierge medicine does is it could stimulate a very valuable debate about values, about is this the type of medical care system we would like to see?
It's already doing that, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, well, I think this show is examples of the beginning of this debate. But I think, you know, I think that we need to have a debate within the medical profession, but we need to have a debate more broadly. I mean, in listening to this discussion this morning, I would feel that I certainly would have some compunctions of joining a practice like Dr. Flyer's because of the notion that I was going to be getting much say better care for myself, but I was going to be denying it to many other people along the way.
John Goodson, you got just a couple of seconds.
Comment. I think as a profession, we have an obligation not to use our position to profiteer. The events of the last several months have made us aware that we must take care of one another. We talk about public health, but we don't have a system that takes care of the health of the public. We need to rethink what we've done and what we can do with our healthcare system.
Stephen Flyer, would you come back to the healthcare system from this practice you're setting up?
I'm still in the healthcare system.
You know what I mean? Would you know, if all things being equal?
All things being equal, my goal is to provide the best care I can for the most number of patients I can. And we've built a structure that we believe will work for us and for a small number of patients. And if this sets the bar for quality, if this sets the standard for access and for quality, then we've done a service.
Thanks to all of you. Stephen Flyer, Paul Ginsberg, Darren Engelhardt, and John Goodson. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.